from the studios at 2RBH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to this week. And I'm glad, or I hope at least, you're having a good Boxing Day. Boxing Day after the fun and frivolity of Christmas Day. Boxing Day is a six-pack day. We go better, one better, this week. Six-pack plus one. Even more important, it's a salute to the wonderful women of motorsport. To compete in a male-dominated domain, the women have to be twice as good. And they usually are. Green flags to these ladies this week at 30 laps. Six of the best in these modern times, and the plus one is the first woman to grid up with the blokes in Formula One. Even Fangio said she drove fast. Let's go round Monaco in a Maserati with Maria Teresa De Filippis. Hell yes, this week in 30 laps. So, we start with RedBull.com. Six pioneering women who made it big in motorsport. These six respective drivers shook up the traditional boys' club in motor racing from behind the wheel. By James Roberts, published on the RedBull.com website on the 3rd of August 2017. It wasn't long ago that the world of motorsport was men only, a male-dominated affair, from the ranks of paying spectators to the drivers behind the wheel and the suits who were running the show. Many would say motorsport of all forms was still too male-dominated, but things have changed a lot too, and increasingly women have proved they can compete with the men, be it as mechanics or engineers or drivers, and in disciplines from rally to Formula One. Here are a few women drivers who followed their dream, ignored the status quo, and changed the racing game for the better. Danica Patrick. For over a decade now, Wisconsin-born Danica Patrick has blazed a trail that's already left an indelible legacy. She's battled with the best in NASCAR and IndyCar, and despite her extracurricular activities, such as appearing in hip-hop videos and FHM photo shoots, attracting some sadly misogynistic-like abuse, as a result, she's chalked up some stunning feats on the racetrack. Patrick's still competing at the pointy end of the foot-down, turn-left macho world of NASCAR, and since 2005, her career highlights have included a fourth place in her debut at the Indianapolis 500 and historic podium finish there in 2009. She then sensationally claimed pole at the Daytona 500 in 2014, and in 2008 she also became the only woman to win an IndyCar Series race with a victory at the mighty Japan 300. Mighty impressive feats. Next, we turn to Kiko Ihara. Over the last few decades, Japan has been responsible for some of the most innovative technology on two and four wheels, from powering McLaren's late 1980s and early 1990s dominance in Formula One to propelling sports cars and superbikes to global championships. From that same pioneering spirit came Kiko Ihara. She started racing in 1999. Battling a fair degree of prejudice in her homeland to drive and find a drive in the Ferrari Challenge Championship, eventually earning a drive in the European Formula Renault in 2014. Following a few years racing pretty much anything with an engine, Ihara became the first Asian woman to race at the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and she finished 13th. Overall, in a Labre competition LMP2 machine. She's also been a winner in the Asian Le Mans Series. Pat Moss comes in at number three. The United Kingdom has been at the business end of global motor racing since the beginning. Unsurprisingly, pioneering female stars have also emerged from the UK, one of whom was Pat Moss. Moss? Yes. She was 16-time Grand Prix winner Stirling Moss's younger sister. And after a formative love of horses gave way to an obsession with horse power, she followed in her illustrious sibling's wheel tracks by winning three international rallies at the wheel of an impressive range of kit, from Lancia and Fast Fords to Minis and Saabs. In 1958, she finished an impressive fourth at the RAC rally and drove an Austin Healey to fourth place in the Liège to Rome Liège rally, becoming the first woman to finish in the top 10 of this notorious car-breaking event. Not only that, but her co-driver was another female trailblazer too, Anne Wisdom, and their form in a rally car would change perceptions of what women could do across the motorsport landscape. The women have it all over the blokes this week in 30 laps. Back to the story. Michelle Mouton. From an early age, Michelle Mouton excelled in everything from skiing to ballet and academia. But an early encounter with speed and the thrill of rallying changed everything and focused her mind on a career behind the wheel. Earning a place as an Audi works driver alongside the likes of rally legend Walter Ruhl, Mouton competed during the dazzling and deadly era of Group B, where she took four World Rally Championship victories, claimed 9 podium finishes, 160 stage wins, and even won the completely bonkers Pikes Hill Red Climb. She remains the only woman to win a WRC World Rally Cup event, and working alongside her co-driver Fabrizi Pons proved her mettle in an era that featured not only some of the most enduring cars in rally history, but some of its toughest drivers. Jutta Kleinschmidt comes in next. The event, now called the Dakar Rally, used to be known as the Paris-Dakar Rally, and instead of traversing South America, it crossed France, Spain, Morocco, Mauritania and Mali before ending up 10,460 kilometres later in Dakar, Senegal. In 2001, German driver Jutta Kleinschmidt was competing in a car class and sensationally took outright victory. She had already staked her claim as one of the most formidable competitors in the desert, starting out in the late 1980s racing on motorcycles before switching to four wheels and brilliantly winning a stage of the fearsome event in 1997. But by winning overall in 2001, Kleinschmidt made real history and proved the ultimate endurance test in motorsport is not just a man's world. Last but not least, a bit closer to home, Simona Di Silvestro. These days, Swiss driver Simona Di Silvestro is racing a Nissan in the tough and very macho world of V8 supercars in Australia. In 2010, she moved to the United States and turned heads in IndyCar racing, starring as the series regrouped and regained its prestige following years of political turmoil. Di Silvestro chalked up some solid results in the IndyCar circus and turned in some respectable showings at the landmark Indianapolis 500. Her move to full-time tin-top racing in Australia comes off the back of involvement with the Sauber Formula One team and a strong showing in 2016 at the famous Bathurst 1000, the jewel and the crown of Australian motorsport. Alongside up-and-coming Antipodean star Rennie Gracie, the all-female crew finished the race in a respectable 14th. footnote to that, folks, was this was originally written in 2017. Today, Simona has, in 2020, left V8 Supercars and is now currently a Porsche factory driver in Germany. Her teammate, Renee Gracie, isn't. She made a career switch to some great degree. She is now an adult film actress. Crikey. I'll leave that one right alone, I think. And that was six pioneering women who made it big in motorsport from redbull.com, written by James Roberts and first published on the 3rd of August, 2017. It's got a few more candles than 16, but that was for yesterday. And JC, happy birthday. Moving right along, we go to Motorsport Magazine and we talk to Rob Widows, who is talking about Maria Teresa de Filippis. He writes, I have recently spent some time with a remarkable woman, so spirited, so passionate, so bright-eyed, and she's 85 years old. We salute the first woman to race in a World Championship Grand Prix, now the grand old lady of motor racing. On May the 18th, 1958, Maria Teresa de Filippis drove into the streets of Monte Carlo in a Maserati 250F, the car that Juan Manuel Fangio had used to win his fifth World Championship the previous year. This was a big moment, not only for Maria Teresa, but also for the sport. Women in the 1950s were popular in the pits, but not in the cockpit. Born in Naples into a wealthy family, De Filippis had never been one for toeing the line. From childhood, she was headstrong, knew her own mind. Her aristocratic and competitive father, Conte de Filippis, masterminded the electrification of large parts of rural southern Italy while running many successful companies. He had steered his daughter towards horses, and for a while she was happy in the saddle. And very competitive, keeping up with three brothers stiffened her resolve. My brothers, they had a bet I could never be a really fast driver, she says, her eyes flashing. So my father gave me a Fiat 500. I was 22 and I won my first ever race in that car. And that is how it began. After the horses, it was cars. I loved the speed and the thrill of it. By 1954, the 28-year-old was winning races across Italy and finished runner-up in the Italian Sports Car Championship, racing her own BMW. The wins kept coming, and De Filippis began to think about a move to single-seaters. Eyebrows were raised about a woman who had the nerve to take on the men in a man's world. It never worried me, all of that, she said. I just wanted to race. My father helped me, of course. He inspired me to succeed in whatever I chose to do. My mother didn't object too much either, because I was winning. She liked that, you know. Physically, it wasn't a problem, not in sports cars anyway. I was fit, riding horses and competing all the time as a teenager. There are three of us involved in this chat, Maria Teresa and her husband Theo Hucksek, chipping in with translation. There is clearly a deep bond between husband and wife, married for half a century and still working well as a team. You have to understand, Theo dives in, a look of bemused admiration in his eyes. Maria Teresa is a very determined woman, not afraid of anything, and nobody can tell her what to do or what not to do. And she can be intolerant, passionately so, when someone stands in her way or insults her intelligence. Early in the day, De Philippis had given short shift to a young reporter who wanted to ask her about Formula One. What had been the problem, I wondered. Theo started to laugh. She was asked how she dealt with sponsors when she was in Formula One. Sponsors? My God! Maria Theria is from one of Italy's richest families. There were no sponsors, no managers. She raced her own cars, made her own decisions. And even at Maserati, she took no orders. Just because they were men, that didn't mean they could tell her what to do. De Philippis is smiling and very animated. That is why I went to Maserati, she says, and why I never wanted to go to Ferrari. Why would I want to be at Ferrari? Just because I am Italian? No. At that time, I did not want to be commanded by Mr. Ferrari. I spoke to him and told him I didn't want to drive for his team. In those days, he would say one word and everybody jumped. Not for me, she said. Also, I felt there was no real culture, no real depth at all. At Maserati, it was more of a family concern, with more real people, and they're easier to talk to, and I could make my own car and take it to the team. That was important for me. Let me tell you, Maria Theresa is not at all a normal person, adds Theo. She was taught privately, taught the values of the real world at the time, honour, engagement, responsibility, things like that, and they never talked about money. It's not worth speaking about in the family. The attitude was that nobody was going to tell a De Philippis what to do. Maria Theresa had built a reputation through the lower formula for having exceptional courage, even being a little too brave at times. Moving to the Maserati Grand Prix team in 1958 was by far her biggest challenge. Fangio told me I drove too fast, that I should go a little slower, she says, her face still alive with a memory. But I was never anxious. I didn't feel any fear. These men in Formula One, they were my heroes. Fangio, Ascari, Villarossi, they were good to me. I never had any problems with the big drivers, only the smaller ones who didn't like it when I beat them. I admired Fangio as a person and a driver because he was a simple man and he worked hard, very hard, to achieve all the success he had. Nothing was given to him. On the track, I called him my race father because he treated me so well, so normally, and I admired him for that. He was a gentleman. In those far-off days, De Philippis was a glamorous addition to the pit lane, a tough racing driver, but also a beautiful young woman, a fact that did not escape many of her admirers. But she won't be drawn into tales of romance, let alone any revelry, in the heady world of Grand Prix racing. The relationships within the team were influenced by the older drivers. They were all older than me, so they would protect me from anything like that. I could just look after myself, you know. And when things became too insane or too vulgar, then I would joke with them, make fun of them, and they would go away. Tony Brooks, who raced against her in 1957, backs this up. There must have been a bit of chauvinism around. Not much has changed there. Formula One is pretty macho. But she was well able to cope. She was an attractive lady, and I believe she was courted by Luigi Musso when she was admired not only for her beauty, but also for her courage in a race car. She had guts and was respected by her fellow competitors for that. I thought it was absolutely great she was having a go in Grand Prix racing. In her book, La Signorina F1, De Philippis describes the challenge of Monaco and a Maserati 250F. Sadly, the book is now out of print, so to hear it from the woman herself is a real pleasure. Si, si, va bene, I tell you, she begins, gesticulating for me to listen. For Monte Carlo, I was aware there was some craziness, something missing in my head. Everybody was encouraging me. They say, Maria Theresa, pay attention when you drive at Monte Carlo. But I had courage, maybe too much, and the limit of my fear was perhaps too far away. I was not frightened of speed, and that's not always a good thing. I was at the limit of my physical stamina. Steering on the 250F was so heavy into the slow corners, she says, moving about in her seat as she perched in the cockpit of the Maserati. Leaning her head to one side, it was okay at speed, but in the bends it was very tiring. There was one of my problems in Monte Carlo. It was a man's work there, and I came to the point where physicality was just too much. Somewhere like Spa, it was not a problem. But nobody expected me to win at Monaco, and so, in those circumstances, I could do what I did with no shame. In the end, she failed to qualify for the race, but a point had been made. As she talks, Theo grins. She was always known as Bilotino because she was by far the smallest person racing. The other people, they still call her out, "Hey, Bilotino," but there are less and less of them now. De Filippis took part in three more GPs in 1958 with the Scuderia Centro Sud Maserati team, finishing 10th in Belgium and retiring in Portugal and Monza, but she had made an impact on those around her. She was a toughie, and full marks for her having a go, observes Brooks. She didn't run at the front, but she was very competent, commanded by the respect of the men, she played the game. I never heard anything negative about Maria Teresa. And remember, she'd done very well in sports car racing with her Oscar. That, dear readers, is just a type of motor vehicle, a race car. In 1959, De Filippis joined forces with Jean Bihara, only to walk away from racing in August in tragic circumstances. For the 59 season, Jean had built the Bihara Porsche in Modena, based on an RSK, and this car was built for me to race, she explains quietly. There are many, many delays, and the car was ready just in time for second practice at Monte Carlo. So Hans Hermann had a go, and Wolfgang von Tripp, and neither could get the car onto the grid. Stirling Moss advised me not to go any further with the car. There was no way to qualify, and that was that. Then, in August, I was supposed to race the car at Avis, but Berra had had a fight with Ferrari and left the team. So he was without a drive and offered to go to Avis with me to run the car. I said, "No, it's your car. You must race. I'm not going." In the sports car race that weekend, Berra was killed, and that was just too much for me. So tragic. Too many friends dying. De Filippis turned her back on the sport and went away to start a family. And it wasn't until 1978 that she returned to the fold, joining the Club International des Anciens Pilotes de Grand Prix Formula One and establishing old acquaintances. "I've got to know Maria Teresa much better since your involvement in the Pilotes," says fellow member Brooks. "When we were racing, we were all so absorbed in our own teams that we really only met at the dinners we had after the Grand Prix. She was a remarkable lady. No doubt about that." Indeed, she became the club's vice president in 1997 and was made honorary president days before celebrating her 85th birthday last October with a party in Modena, the hometown of Maserati. These days, she lives a quiet life near Milan, but her work for the club keeps her in touch with the sport for which she still has a passion. "I like to go to some events. I like the atmosphere of the historic cars, the old cars that I remember," she says. "But I like not so much the modern racing. Very little remains of the sport we knew when all the drivers were friends and spent time together. I watch some races on television, but so much of what the modern drivers say is so predictable. Maybe they're not as free as we were in our time." Free, she most certainly was, and is. Predictable, she is not. These days, we're not out and about with the club. She is besieged by autograph hunters, clutching photographs and copies of her book. She captured the imagination of people inside and outside the sport, and was admired for her skill and bravery, and above all, her free spirit. As Theo and Maria Teresa walk away, she takes my arm, flashes a conspirational smile, says, "You want to know more? Maybe you need to read the book, no?" Many more stories. To this day, the only other woman to follow her example and make a World Championship Grand Prix grid was Lella Lombardi and Desiree Wilson, although the latter was in the 1981 South African Grand Prix, which was later stripped of its championship status. One day we will certainly see another woman in Formula One. but DeFilippis will remain the original, feisty pioneer who proved that gender need not be a barrier. Salute la signorina. Maria Teresa died on the 8th of January, 2017. Hey, what a person, hey? What a character. I think that was a great little story from Motorsport Magazine, and they were heady days, those early 50s, late 50s and early 60s, for the men of Formula One, and very much the same for the small number of women that got involved at the loud pedal end. We've got time, I think, for a couple of weird facts from the automobile industry. The first electric cars. No, the first electric cars were not Teslas, milk floats or Dodgems. The first one appeared in 1884, invented by Briton Thomas Parker, a year before the first car equipped with an internal combustion engine from Carl Benz. Electric power was very popular in the motoring earlier days, especially as they didn't require cranking to start and only gave way to the internal combustion engine as the latter became much better and practical. And as we've already discussed on the show quite some time ago, Lamborghini's tractors. Lamborghini is famous today for making some of the world's fastest and most glamorous supercars. But it started out making tractors, and the original firm still does. The sports car side is today owned by Audi. Lamborghini's mightiest tractor today, until recently, was called the R8, the name it shares with the mightiest Audi. Porsche also produced tractors for a period in the 50s and early 60s. So there you go. It's all happening this week. We go from supercars to tractors. And I hope you've enjoyed the show this afternoon. I've certainly enjoyed bringing it to you, as I always do. The show is written and produced in the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. And please tune in next week when we'll talk about something else, perhaps. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Boxing Day, and take care. If you're travelling, travel safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Until then, bye for now.